Who are you?
Hello?
Who that?
Man, this song takes me back down memory lane. I remember as a kid, I probably was 10, and, you know, it was bedtime. You know, my parents used to let me watch Star Trek, I think, at night. It used to come on, I think, at 10:30. It was actually the real Star Trek. Like, the, you know, new episodes would come on. It was great. It was my favorite show. But after I would turn off Star Trek, I would, you know, be laying in bed, and I had this clock radio, this school... rectangle, I guess, kind of clock radio, and it had the numbers that kind of flipped, you know, the numbers would flip, you know, it wasn't digital. It had a digital look, but it was not digital. And this song just takes me back every time I hear it. I heard it the other day I was working, and it came up on one of the playlists. And it always takes me back to this moment in bed where I can, the hall light is shining into my room, and I'm looking over at this clock radio and the music coming out of it. And it's weird. I don't know why that is. Do you guys have that ever happen? It's just this one song or one thing that triggers this exact same memory every time. It's kind of crazy. I don't know why I was thinking about it. I was thinking about it the other day when I heard this song. Actually, there's several songs. The Eagles do it to me. You know, those old Boss Skaggs, those old, you know, early 80s, late 70s songs. I don't know. They always take me back to this one place. It's very strange. Don't ask me why I'm even talking about it. Just remember when I heard it the other day, I'm like, oh, I'm going to play that in the podcast. And... especially this right here. It's a good question. I said the other day at the end of the podcast, if there was no other people on this planet, I would have no problems. Does that make any sense? Like how much of my life is based on what other people are doing or what other people think? I mean, isn't that, I guess, life, right? I mean, if it was just me on the planet, I wouldn't care what I look like. I wouldn't have anything to compare to. I wouldn't have people's lives to compare mine to and my happiness. I remember when I was a kid, my mom used to always say, when you grow up, make big bucks. Big bucks. Those two words, big bucks. And I think that was like the beginning of the seed, thinking that that was happiness. You know, I think my parents grew up in a time where, you know, they were poor. There was definitely people that were more poor, but, you know, they were not from a well-off family. You know, I think my mom's dad worked the railroads. He was never around. He was always out working. A lot of interesting relationships that went on back then. And so it was important for her to pass on that message. When you grow up, make big bucks. Like, that's going to make you happy. That'll be happiness. Someone was telling me yesterday that their kid, that they're like, well, what do you want to do when you grow up? And they said, I want to be a millionaire. I mean, that's kind of the picture that life paints for us, right? That's happiness, money. If you asked me today, are you well off? I'd be like, no. I'm pretty poor considering compared to the rest of the world. But then I forget to think about what I was like clearly when like this song was out. But even in my teens and in my 20s, you know, I wasn't the guy that went to college, went to the School of Hard Knocks. I don't know. Compared to where I was, I'm doing really well. Compared to where I was headed, I'm doing fantastic. You know, who am I? Who are you? I was thinking, you know, when I first got sober, I was new and improved, right? I wasn't driving drunk, so pat me on the back. I wasn't drinking every day, you know, put me up on someone's shoulders and carry me around the town. Look at me. I'm being amazing. I wasn't being abusive verbally to, you know, I used to be the guy that used to get drunk and then be, you know, start shit, be abusive. I'm not taking people's lives hostage anymore like I used to. I mean, really, when I was actively drinking and drugging, I was taking everybody around me, their lives hostage. What are we going to do? What about him? You know, I had this conversation, you know, with my father actually last night. You know, my brother's doing really well, but there's been times where him and I both have not done well. And, you know, it's like, what about if this or what about if that? Like, 50 years later, and our past behavior is still kind of taking us hostage. I never thought about that when I was getting sober. I used to take people hostage in when I was doing well. Not on purpose, but when I look back at it, that's what it ends up being. I never really understood that. One of the things that would come up for me is the word rightly. You know, are you doing things rightly? And I never understood that. One of the first things that sobriety brought to me was just this peace, because every day, and when I was drinking and doing what I was doing, it was just regret and shame. And just to not have that going on was a huge relief. I would find out it takes a lot of work to just be normal. But I had to, I think I confused normal with amazing. And when I always say, if you live out in the field of manure for long enough, when you finally come out, you're going to think the air is from God. When actually it's just normal air, you've just been living this shit life for so long. And that's kind of what it was like when I first got sober. Like, I'm amazing. I remember going to the grocery store. If I've said this story, sorry. But I used to go to the grocery store and, you know, I'd get my cart, you know, go buy stuff, fill it up. And I would take the cart back to my car, take the stuff out of the cart, and then I would put the cart, you know, in the place that holds the cart out in the parking lot. But when I got sober, I started taking the cart back all the way up to the store, because I was sober. I was amazing. I'm living at a higher level. I'm better now. I'm better. I'm better than everybody else because I'm sober. So I need to take the cart all the way back to the store. I didn't realize how much I was paying attention to see if someone was watching me and recognizing how amazing I was. I mean, clearly the people had to be recognizing the next level I was living. And it would take me a while to recognize that. This, all of a sudden, this amazing person that I had become because I wasn't drinking. And the reality was I was just doing normal stuff. Does anybody have a wooden Jesus? It's a great song. Great lyrics. Chris Cornell. Bro! Should have called me. Bands where you feel like you could almost be the fourth or fifth member, you know, like, you need me to harmonize with you, Chris? Yeah, let me step in, bro. Those are my, I've never really connected with bands that I couldn't be, imagine, I couldn't imagine being a part of, like the fifth member. Eagles were always great for that. Fleetwood Mac, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam. These are, you know, Alice in Chains. I watched this, Alice in Chains Unplugged last night on YouTube. It's, I don't know how old it is, 10, 12 years now. Lane Staley was just sick as fuck. Just deep in his addiction. Black circles under his eyes. Gloves. Just that ashy, nasty looking skin color of someone that's just deep in addiction and clearly not focusing on health. You know, when he died from an overdose, they said that they didn't find him for like a week or two. He had separated himself so much from everybody else that nobody was checking on him. I don't want to say nobody cared about him, but, you know, he wasn't surrounded by loved ones all the time. What a sad way to go. And I watched that Unplugged, and it's one of those, you know, the Pearl Jam one, the Nirvana, the Unplugged, the Alice in Chains Unplugged. I mean, those three shows alone were fucking epic. The Cranberries. I mean, I love that show. It's unfortunate it's not around. Maybe it is. I don't even know. Maybe I'm just not interested in the bands anymore that might be on there. But the Alice in Chains version is just crazy. And, but just so sick. You could just see it in him. And you just feel bad. You know, he wrote, what did it say? On a cloud of pink. Yeah. On a cloud of pink that turns to gray and I'm alone again. I mean, I don't know if anybody's listening to this podcast and has been gotten sober, they call it that pink cloud. You know, me taking the shopping cart all the way back to the Giant, that's called being on a pink cloud. And there'll be a ton of those things that would happen in my life. I've seen it happen to a lot of people. And that pink cloud, but then all of a sudden, you know, no one's coming up and saying, hey man, great job. Great job taking that cart all the way back to the Giant. I wasn't getting recognized. And slowly that cloud, that pink cloud that I was on, turned to gray. The pink left. And just like he says, and I'm alone again. And that's, you know, I'm alone again with my thoughts, my doubt. It is when somebody, I was talking to somebody about a person that has now is about 5 years sober. And I remember being 5 years sober and just absolutely having no fucking idea what I was doing. But I was sober. I had a coin. I had my coin. And that coin was so important to me. I had, you know, I got sober in 97. I had a back injury in 99. And, I mean, serious back injury. I mean, I was deadlifting, popped my back. I mean, my dad had to come get me, take me to the hospital. I got prescribed something. I think it was oxycodone. And I remember taking those pills and being so fucking high. And not high, but just wanting to shut my eyes and just sit there. And that back injury would continue. My back hurts right now. But that back injury would continue to allow me to keep my toe in my addiction. But it wasn't drinking. But I would take those pills, And, you know, when it initially happened, you know, I was given a bottle of pain pills and anti-inflammatory and muscle relaxers, and I followed the regimen and got better and stopped taking them. But it just slowly opened that door. And then the next thing you know, my back, I'd be like, I think my back's it's flaring up, my back. And I'd put in a call. And every... that it was, it's so crazy because you hear about this all the time. You hear about people that just do these painkillers and then it just begins a long spiral down of addiction. And those pain pills that they gave me that night were, I think, were oxycodone. I would chase that high for I don't even know how many years. They would never give me oxycodone, though. It would always be like Percocet or Vicodin or some nasty ass painkiller that give you that would give me that, I guess, kind of that high that keep me in it. But it was, you know, it was never that amazing moment, you know, that I've somehow created in my mind and remember. And so my back would act up. Oh, I better call the doctor. And he would give me these pills and it would say, take one. And I would take three. I remember I was so fucked up on these stupid pills. I remember I took like four or five. And they made me so nauseous, I threw them up in a bucket, and then I picked the pills out of the bucket and took them, retook them. Like, they hadn't even digested. Like, they almost, don't ask me, it's fucking crazy what I would do back then. But I was sober. I had my coin. And I was so confused. And, you know, one of the things about drinking, I used to switch. I'd turn into this asshole guy. You know, not at first. First, I was nice guy, fun guy. And then at the end of the night, I was passive aggressive, cruel. I would say some of the cruelest, hurtful shit to people. And pills started doing that to me in the end. I would have to, you know, oh, my back hurts. I guess I'll have to get some pills. And as soon as I would take them, that smile came off my face, that clenched jaw, angry, distant drug addict would show up. But I was sober, right? Because they were prescribed. And I was taking these pills, and finally I'd said something or did something, or, you know, I'd hit the fucking bottom. And the problem was is that me doing these pills allowed me to start drinking. You know, I wasn't building a foundation. I wasn't drinking, but I wasn't doing all the other stuff. I was taking pills, and I was living a lie. It was a fraud. And that day that I was driving down the road, I was over in Easton, and that voice said, hey, you deserve it. That voice was only there because I was still taking these pills because of my back. Prescribed. You know, I wasn't buying them off the street. And that I've always done that. Like, I never get fired because I was drinking, so I wasn't an alcoholic. Well, I never bought pills off the street. I only got them prescribed from a doctor in a pharmacy, so I wasn't an addict. And plus, I liked taking them, so I would tell myself, this is why this is okay. This is why this is okay. So that foundation of sobriety that I was 5, 6... almost 7 years in, was really built loosely on Vicodin and whatever the shit else I was taking, Percocet. So that day when that voice showed up and said, dude, you deserve it, I was already on board. I was already using. I was already drinking, so to speak. It was just in a pill form. So what was the difference? And it was funny. It is funny because I picked up, almost lost everything, took about a year, and then I finally called a friend up in Pennsylvania and I said, I had been on a bender. My wife left, took the baby. My son wasn't even a year old. He was just getting to be a year old, and I remember trying, you know, even after they left, I couldn't stop drinking and using. And I went out with some friends at one of the bars and got fucking hammered and ended up doing drugs and drinking all night. And I remember standing on this porch, it was like 4 a.m, smoking a cigarette. And I just thought, what the fuck is going on? And I had to meet my ex-wife later that morning and pick up my son because it was his birthday. And I was so full of shame and guilt. I was whacked out of my mind, too. I literally didn't sleep. It was miserable. If anybody's ever gone through that, that is awful. And I went and met her, and I took him up to Dover and bought him as many birthday presents as I could to try to make that shame and guilt go away. And it didn't. And I remember driving back and heading back to Rehoboth, and I had, you know, my son in the back and all the toys that I tried to buy the shame and guilt away with. And I reached out to a friend and I said, look, I'm in trouble. And this guy came down from Pennsylvania. I told my ex-wife, I said, look, I need to go somewhere. I'm going to go. I just need to get out of here. So she came and got David, and this guy came down, drove 4 hours to come get me, took me back up to York, Pennsylvania, and I stayed up in this halfway house for 9 days. And I remember right before I left, the counselor goes, I just want you to know that I think you're absolutely full of shit. And I thought, well, I have almost 7 years of sobriety. And she goes, you got 9 days. And I don't know how much of that sobriety of those 7 years that you think you had was even legit. And she was right. I was full of shit. I was trying to come off like I was some sober expert, and I wasn't. I was just full of shit. And I really had no clue what sobriety was. And that would be the last time I would drink. But then I got out of there and I came back and was sober. But then I had to start taking the pain pills again, and I just didn't realize, because I knew it. Actually, let me take that back. I realized it. I took advantage of it because they were prescribed, and my back is really injured. 2 years later, Matt would say, listen, man, you either need to stop taking those pain pills and change your sobriety date, or you're never going to get sober. So I changed my sobriety. I stopped taking the pain pills. I finally recognized, or finally became honest about it, and changed my sobriety date. December 22nd. And this December, God willing, I'll celebrate 12 years. Just grateful to be awake and alive today. Just sharing stories. Don't pay much attention to me. Recognize that shit today? I mean, what's the point of being sober? Why am I even sober? What's the point? Fucking early, man. My voice is like cheddar. Cheddar. You know, well, it's a good question. What's the point? Why did I get sober? You know, if I went back to March 31st, 1997, on that corner when I got punched in the face, the reason I got sober was to avoid explaining why I had stitches again. That would be really the beginning of, you know, a bunch of years not drinking, but being full of shit. Why do I want to be sober today? I mean, what's the point? Just so I can have a coin and take a picture of my coin with my number? Is it legit, though? Am I getting the point? Am I getting it? Do I understand? I mean, it doesn't say that when you start. It's like, this is why you should be sober, so that you can constantly analyze yourself and recognize when you're being a douchebag. It says, no, so that you can take pictures of your coin and post it on Instagram. Sober today so that I can show up and I can be available to whoever needs me. And, you know, we're going through some stuff with my mom, and so my dad's kind of by himself. And, you know, like, we had him over for dinner. I mean, what a gift it is to be able to have my dad over with my wife and my son and sit down with Pop-Up and be able to provide him a nice meal. We cooked him steak. He cooked me steaks for so long. And to be able to sit down and cook my dad a steak and know that, for him to know that he has a safe place to go today. That's why I'm sober. Coins are great, but listen, you know, I can go out on donuts. I can go out spending too much money. Is that being sober? I can, you know, I can express my opinion to somebody that's not very nice. Is that being sober? Or is that just being not drinking? Are you sober or are you mind your own fucking business sober? That's a question I have to ask myself a lot. And so far on this Saturday morning at 8:50, I'm sober. And super grateful. And yeah, I hope everybody has a great day. It's Memorial Day weekend. Enjoy. Get to the beach. Wear your mask. Have an awesome day. Peace.